Welcome to Yasing International Radio. You're with Karine Rayson from The Crew Coach on the Wellbeing Project. Today, we're talking about Zorba Crew Social Club, and the founder of it is Laura. Welcome, Laura, to the show.
Hi, Karine. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Laura. What a privilege to have you here. I can see more and more crew are certainly using their voice to talk about mental health. And basically now having the courage to do. Previously, we would talk about it, but I think lean more on the side of being anonymous. And I think by crew being vulnerable and putting their hands up and saying, hey, I've suffered from depression or I've suffered from substance abuse is really paving the way for others to come forward, but also normalize what we're going through.
Yeah. I agree completely. And firstly, thank you so much. It's such a privilege for me to be here. I really can't believe the sort of traction that Zorba Crew Social Club has gotten in such a short space of time. And yeah, exactly. As it's a lot of the messages that I get and the feedback I have is exactly that. People relating to what it is that I'm sharing, people saying, oh my God, that's me. Oh. It's not abstract. It's that sort of first person lived experience, which is what I'm sharing, which just helps people hopefully know that they're not alone in feeling like they maybe want to change their relationship with drinking.
Yeah, fantastic. Great. So now, if you can give us some context, how long have you been working in the industry for?
Mm-hmm.
And what
about
was
about 100?
Pardon?
About 100 years.
It feels like
100
years, I'm sure.
But I'm like industry, like stalwart. I have been in the industry. I joined in 2006. So,
wow.
Yeah, so I have been in your thing. I joined very fresh faith and a baby. And don't get me wrong, I've taken plenty of break from your thing over the years. But yeah, so that was got my first job in 2006, back when it was a completely different game. And yeah, what was the next part of your
position?
So yeah, I went on to be a chief stew. I joined. Okay. You went on. Yeah.
Okay. I must say, you look amazing. I'm shocked. You look so young as it is. You must be taking very good care of yourself. And I'm sure abstaining from alcohol makes a huge difference to your physical health as well.
Yeah, not drinking definitely is probably the number one thing that I have done to look after myself. It's not just the drinking, which like we all know, it's like it's aging, it's bad for us. It's bad for us physically, mentally, all those sort of things. But it's all the kind of behaviours that come alongside that. So for me, that was binge eating. That was a big thing. And I know that happens for a lot of people, you know, drinking and then not just the night of alcohol, it's the after effect, it's the next day, it's the knock-on effects. Yeah, I often say like the physical and the mental, they're just
intertwined.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just, oh God, what am I doing to my body? For me, it was like, it's really having an impact on my mind.
Okay, do you notice a pattern? If you're saying that you previously had a history of drinking and binge eating, was there a trigger for you? Was there a reason for those behaviours?
Oh my God, this is... I could probably talk for hours about this, but with trying to keep it succinct, just learned coping mechanisms over the years, really.
Yeah.
And with drinking, it's not... Some people... Everybody has a different relationship with alcohol, and for me, it wasn't just used as a coping mechanism, but it also is habitual, especially in yachting. It's just automatic. Like, finish work, crack beer. It becomes habit and it becomes normalized. And going out for drinks midweek because people are bored, all that sort of thing, it just becomes a habit. And then often it can lead into that sort of dependency. Whereas for some people, they can drink every night and they actually don't have a dependency. Other people can drink once a week, but it's a problem. So it's so scary.
Sorry, carry on.
No, please.
When did you notice it was problematic for yourself?
I think I've probably known for a while, to be honest. And I think from the outside looking in, I don't really think people knew I liked to drink. I'd always turn up with a couple of bottles of wine. I always was the sort of done all the WTEC courses. I like every time I went away, it was holidays were based around driving through Burgundy, going to Marlborough, doing wine tasting everywhere. Wine was interwoven with who I was, really. Identity, which is sad when you think about it, but anyway. And I noticed, though, that it was becoming more and more, there wasn't the joy in it really anymore. And it was becoming, I was definitely using it as like a crutch, as a coping tool. Stressful day, have a glass of wine. And when I say a glass of wine, I don't mean a glass of wine. It's such a term that rolls off the tongue. Oh, I'm going to have a glass of wine. For me, it was like a bottle of wine, sometimes two bottles of wine. And yeah, it just got to a point where I realized that I was
I think they've kept something to the show.
So hard. Swearing is also like a rhythm with me. But yeah, I was just lying to myself. I told myself one version of my drinking, but the reality was something else. And I basically woke up one morning. I was back at home. I was in my apartment and I woke up and it was 5 o'clock in the morning and I'd fallen asleep on the sofa having had a couple of bottles of wine the night before. And I just actually woke up and I saw myself and I cut through the rubbish. And I was just like, what am I doing? Who I think I am and the way that I think I live my life and the reality are actually two different things. And I just realized it was holding me back. It was causing me massive amounts of issues with my mental health. I was feeling really depressed. And it wasn't this constant depression. It was this real up and down. Some days I'd be fine. Some days I'd be really low. And I just realized that I wanted more. I wanted to live the life that I thought I was living. The adventurous. But I realized alcohol was starting to become something that was holding me back. And yeah, just that was it.
Did you feel really? Like a mask in a way?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
We're very deep here, but I'm very conscious that this is going to be broadcast to the world. And we haven't discussed how deep you feel comfortable in going.
Ask away, and if I don't comfortable on it,
So I'm just, the objective of these questions are to raise awareness for others who might see themselves in your story. And we all know that everyone's journey is different to get to that point of, hold on, I think I have a problem. Unique to everyone, to the individual. So I'm wondering for you, what was the fear? Did you have a fear?
The fear with relate to about drinking or?
So when we were speaking about the mask and what's underneath that mask, what do you think that Laura was afraid of? What was she hiding from?
Authenticity, probably. Fear of rejection, fear of not being able to be truly myself. And this is something that is people often, the reason why people do develop drinking problems is because of fear of something. And it can be fear of multiple things, it's not just one thing. But for me, you ask if alcohol was a mask. Yeah, it was the way for me. And it was the way for me to keep the bullshit bravado up that everything was fine. And it helped keep a certain amount of emotional distance from people when actually all I was really looking for was connection. But there's the fear attached to that. Too much connection lead to the fear and possibility of rejection.
Yeah. Thank you for your honesty.
No, that's okay. I've always tried to be honest in this platform, that this page that I started, I've often said it's probably in one way a form of like career suicide. And I have a friend of mine who I won't mention by name because he's asked me not to, but he's a captain in the industry. He's a really good friend of mine. We've been friends since 2006. He's sober and I speak to him a lot. He was my first port of call when I first decided I wanted to stop drinking, which was a few years before I actually stopped drinking. And I said, I'm doing this thing and it feels like there's a lot of... outside the door. They absolutely hate the shut door anyway. And I said, do you know, this is really gaining ground, or is there anything you want to add? And he said, I'd love to be involved, but I can't put my name to anything. And this is a captain who's been in the industry for same length of time as me, because there's that fear that it's like, who wants to employ somebody who openly talks about the fact that they don't drink, because that indicates the problem. And so he has said, and he's employed right now, but there's a certain amount of reticence, because there is that sort of, by being vulnerable and opening this conversation, it's, oh, are we going to have a problem with you?
So just to clarify, he's afraid of being ostracized for doing something pro-social, which is abstaining from alcohol?
Because it then implies that there was a problem, which means that he had to stop, which means, oh, does our captain have a drinking problem that he...
Stigma.
Passed. Yeah. And that's so much of the problem.
Many aspects, whether it's mental health issues like depression, or if you are a victim of bullying and assault. I had someone reach out to me. We did an interview and she's like, I think I'm not getting any jobs this season because I've spoken up. How sad is that? But this is what we really need to challenge within our industry. And there's two directions we can go in. It's us as crew speaking about it and making it vocal and saying, hey, this is not okay. But it's also changing the mentality at the top. And in order to that notion to actually come into fruition and for there to be a change, they need to be open to it. But I think they're so dogmatic in their belief system.
Absolutely. I agree so much. And the industry still runs on this sort of premise that it's like, you're highly disposable, easily replaceable. If you're a problem, we'll get rid of you and get somebody else in. And since the industry has become busier and busier and busier over, certainly since I joined, but especially in the latter years since like Below Deck, let's say, and everybody wants to work on a boat. And now it's just, if you're not working out, get rid. And I've had somebody reach out to me who got fired because of his drinking, and he was like, I didn't even feel like it was a problem, but it was obviously a problem for the captain. But also he's like, but other people drank more than me, but I think he just wanted to make an example. That's a whole different conversation. But I think there is a certain, obviously yachts employ grown-ups, adults who have their own sense of personal responsibility, but I almost feel like there should be a certain duty of care. Whereas if somebody comes to you with an issue, that person should know that they can come to you with an issue firstly, and also not just run the risk of, okay, you're off. And as you say, as potentially happened with the person you were speaking to, name gets blacklisted. And it's just this, with so many people in the industry, especially junior crew who are coming in their sort of early 20s, who haven't really necessarily maybe been away from home even much. And all of a sudden they're thrust into this environment.
It's where culture as well. It's a culture that everyone subscribes to, and you feel compelled to subscribe to that culture. I know Sethi on one of my vessels, it felt that way. And I've never been a big drinker. Probably my early teens I was drinking some of the shooters I was consuming back then. But yeah, I couldn't keep up to the point where I was trying to throw, I did successfully throw some of those shooters into the bushes behind me and not down them. But I felt in a way you're not fun if you don't, like you're boring. And yeah, the other thing was, if you're sober and everyone else is drunk, that's boring too. So you might drink to keep up with the Joneses and stay awake and participate in the festivity like a loser. So there's so many underlying reasons why we feel like we should be part of it.
Yeah, again, it coming back to the questions you're asking me about fear and that fear of connection and lack of connection. It's like nobody wants to be on the outside of the pack, do they?
Yeah.
Targets are one of our most primal needs to be like part of. And so it can be really hard. And initially that was part of the reason why I started this, was to connect with other sober crew members and to help other people connect with each other. So that is like the plan, so that we can create this network of people where it's like, you can always find somebody. You're not always on your own. And also just opening these conversations. I think it's really important. We don't talk about things like this, especially in the industry. And just so that some people know that they always have somebody that they can talk to about stuff like this, and that they can always just connect with someone. And yeah, that's the hope.
Okay, so it's a place of belonging, connection, no judgment, understanding, and a place of support. That's what I'm hearing from this group that you create. Yeah. So how can people find you and how does it work?
At the moment, I'm still predominantly just on Instagram. My website is nearly finished. And then on there will be as soon as that's launched, you can also go on there where there will be all sorts of different methods of support, plenty of sort of resources and things like that, where people can get some outside help or guidance, or if there's somebody that they want to talk to. And then there is a Facebook group, but there's a few glitches there, so that will also be up and running. And so when you join the Facebook group, you then also become more a part of this community, and that's probably where there'll be all the announcements of things like these sober meetups, which are going to hopefully start happening very soon. And we want to start arranging sober meetups, so internationally, really, just so people have, again, a group somewhere they can go and be like, it's not just me, not drinking.
Yes, yeah.
And just to show, I have more fun now as a sober person than I did drinking. A, I remember everything. B, is I've just lost the bullshit.
Yeah.
That, I really enjoy it.
So then going back to losing the bullshit and what was behind the mask, those feelings of worried about rejection, for example, and those other points that you made, how have you dealt with them now?
I think good question. By being open about them, by talking about them with people that I trust. And I think I probably still am working through them. I don't think sobriety is this sort of magic thing where it's like, oh, you stop drinking and everything becomes wonderful.
It's like ripping off the band-aid. Drinking is the band-aid, but you're not dealing with the wound. It's the healing that comes through that, and it's kindness, it's patience, it's a journey. You're absolutely on a journey.
And yeah, I've often described it, so drinking in the same way as people have different things. It can be food, sex, drinking, drugs, shopping, whatever. It's symptomatic of something that's going on underneath. And the trouble with drinking, though, is it is also an addictive substance. And in my case, and in the case of lots of people who I speak to, it then creates situations, scenarios, thoughts, behaviors that then create more shame, that create more problems. It's fuel to the fire. So then that sense of maybe already deep down you have a feeling that you don't like yourself very much or whatever. Pour alcohol on that. It just, those feelings just deepen. And then, like I say, and I say so often, and this is why I am open and quite vulnerable, is we all have things that we feel so ashamed of, and especially in drinking, those things, because often when we drink, we do things that feel out of character, that don't really align with who we feel we are, which creates this massive disconnect. And then, again, just really deepens those feelings of shame and like self-loathing and everything like that. And you just, people aren't alone in that thought, in that feeling. It's so isolating, and you feel like, oh my God, nobody else feels as rotten as I do. Nobody else can possibly understand how I'm feeling. And sorry, that's why I do try to share openly and honestly, just so people know they're not on their own, because it's not a unique, it feels very personal and it feels very unique and it feels like nobody else gets it, but people do. And that's why I just always encourage people to try and reach out, because sharing the stuff that you're struggling with just helps to lessen it. And by lessening it, you can try and move through it.
Great point, Sir Laura. Last question for you. Someone's a friend of this, and they might be thinking, there's some truth to what Laura is saying, and I remember times where I've passed out on the couch and felt shit the next day, and I've had anxiety, and maybe I do want a better lifestyle for myself. What would be the starting point? I know everyone's journey is different and your experience might not, or your advice might not suit the person who's listening, but it could help someone else. So what would you say if you're wanting to abstain and become sober? Where would you start?
Oh, that is such a good question, because as you say, everybody is different. What works for one person won't necessarily work for another. Support is really, I think, it's not essential, but it certainly makes things a hell of a lot easier. So I would look to, seek some support in some way. And that can be just, it doesn't have to be through anything organized, or but even just talking to somebody who you trust, being like, hey, this is where I'm at. Somebody who you hopefully know that you won't get judgment from. If you've got a really judgmental mum who's going to, well, I've always told you had a problem with your drinking, probably don't go to that person.
Yeah.
But if you have somebody you trust, and if you don't, then that's where I would look for outside support, and just be really honest about how you're feeling. And I would then suggest just not, I don't know how to phrase this, that's not catastrophizing. It's so easy to, I'm going to say catastrophizing, don't look for the worst case scenario. It's so easy when you've been doing something a long time, your brain's going to throw up all these reasons why you shouldn't change the norm. So don't focus on all the reasons why you can't stop drinking. I've got that wedding in 8 months' time, or it's going to be Christmas in 4 months' time, or it's a birthday. You know, stop. Don't go to the ends of your, like, the reasons why you can't, and just focus on the day ahead of you. Literally that. And as soon as you can just get one day under your belt, you know, I'm not saying every day then becomes easy, but just focus on the day ahead of you every day. That's what I do every single day, is I just focus on today and day by day.
Yeah.
Day by day, you rack those days up, but don't try and eat the whole elephant, just one day at a time.
Again, great advice, Laura. Such a pleasure to have you here. And it was wonderful to have a bit of a chuckle before we started this interview as well. But wishing you all the very best in your journey. You're doing such a great thing, and I'm thrilled to be working with you on the mental health forum that will be on in a couple of weeks. And I'm sure there would be a recording for those who can't make it live, hopefully. But let's stay in touch.
Sounds great. Thanks so much. I'm so honored to have been asked to come and speak here. So, really grateful. Thank you.
Sure.